Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Stop by Club Hollywood Casino Shoreline and Royal Casino Everett and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Our final hour here, Brock and Salk, as we are over at Safeco Field. Scott Servais will sit in with us coming up in a half hour. Looking forward to having him in to talk some Mariners, figure out where they're at in this young season. I want to talk some Ichiro with him. Maybe we'll do that coming up here, Brock, in a few minutes, maybe 15 or so. I keep coming back to this Michael Bennett thing from yesterday. And if you were listening to the show just a little bit after now, you know, we had Greg Bishop on from Sports Illustrated. We're asking about really the Seahawks in general, and he's just telling us a story of his Michael Bennett article that he was going to write, that he was writing in the process of writing last year.
No, that he has written.
Fair enough. But didn't actually get picked up by Sports Illustrated. It got bumped, essentially. And he just laid this bombshell on us.
I was with Michael Bennett all fall last year. Story never ran, unfortunately. But, like, he was telling me he read books during team meetings last year. Like, that was, like, he said it kind of normally. He'd heard Carol say the same thing over and over for 7 years.
You could tell there, it instantly affected me, and I kept being bothered about it throughout the day. I mean, I sent out this tweet yesterday just saying it's sad to hear that Mike B took advantage of his coach's style after seeing the benefits of it. Yeah. And it's not like he was under a repressive regime. You get tired of hearing the same cool stories, the same fun music at practice, the same freedom to speak your mind. Get out of here. And honestly, Brock, it's how I feel. I ask everyone out there, imagine yourself in this spot. I want you to imagine that you're Michael Bennett. Okay, Brock, can you do this? Imagine yourself Michael Bennett.
Okay.
You're about the right height, and almost. He's a little shorter, maybe, mm-hmm. but just put on a lot of weight mm-hmm. and a tremendous amount of strength. And imagine that you are Michael Bennett, and the Seahawks selected you or brought you in as a free agent twice and ultimately paid you three times.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to imagine that you're Michael Bennett, and Pete Carroll brought you in once and paid you three times. Would you imagine if you got bored of his stories, you would treat him like this? Mm. Like, can you imagine sitting in team meeting? And everyone out there, I want you to imagine this. If you're driving around, think about it. If you're at your office, close your eyes and think about this for a sec. Imagine you are bored at your meeting for Pete Carroll, a guy who has loud music and guys playing basketball and does everything in his power to try to make it fun. But for whatever reason, it's just not fun to you anymore. Mm. And obviously this just happened within the last couple of weeks because you just signed an extension in the offseason. So clearly you weren't mad about this or bored last year. But now, all of a sudden, you've gone from being totally invested to now you're bored.
Tuning out.
How would you handle it? Would you take out your book and make sure everybody around saw you reading it? Or would you find some other way to handle the fact that you had lost your genuine interest in what was going on?
Your greatest strength, Mike, so often in life turns out to be your greatest weakness. And I've realized that in my life to a degree with certain gifts and things that I have and relationships I have and how challenged they can become. And for Pete Carroll, his individual empowerment and the freedom of expression and the lack of really any rules. And even rule one, which we've brought up for 8 years, you know, protect the team. Well, that wasn't enforced, okay, because Richard didn't, and it just was never enforced. You know, Dabo Swinney said something in our podcast last week. He said, rules without relationship lead to rebellion.
Hmm.
When you have all these rules, but you got no relationship, it leads to rebellion.
Is this the opposite?
Yes.
Relationship without rules yes. also leads to rebellion?
That's exactly what it
that's
is.
That's an interesting view on it.
That's exactly what it is. Huh. And I think we felt that. And I will also say this. This comes, and it's so funny that, you know, 20 years from now, we're going to look back at this decade or so, like 2010 to 2020, and there were the Patriots winning a bunch, but there's the Seahawks winning a bunch, and, oh, they even matched up. And to look at from like a coaching or a team teaching as or a parenting perspective, anything, management, to see those two polar opposites. A Belichick that is the least players coach ever on the planet. And there is Pete, who is the most players coach that's ever been made on the planet. And yet both of them, Mike, at the end of the tenure, it looks like, the thing is going to just blow up. You know, that this Brady and this Gronk and everything else is just going to blow up at the end. It's my ego. It's your ego. It's I get the credit. It's you get the credit. And I think here in Seattle is it was dismantled. Yeah. And I think a word that resonated with you is it was dismantled here defensively.
I guess the thing that's so hard for me,
some of that
though,
same
Brock,
perspective.
What's so hard for me is seeing players that were in it and saw it work,
right,
actually rebel against it. I get that players can rebel against things that don't work.
Yep.
It makes sense. Hey, this isn't working. I'm not going to play for this coach anymore.
Yep.
We see basketball teams quit on their coach all the time, but they don't quit on Phil Jackson because they understand that what Phil does has worked over and over and over again. And to quit on the coach who brought you to two Super Bowls, or in Belichick's case, like 1,000 of them, I'm sorry, I don't get it.
But Mike, why it stretches
further. It just makes me sad.
It does, but why it stretches even further is that we know, okay, there's times as partners, as a flagship of the Seahawks, there's things that we're privy to. And the number of times that Pete has covered, he has been the one. That's why it makes you a little bit sad. He has taken the bullets at every single turn. You know what? He's protected Richard. He never threw Richard on the bus ever. Ever.
He almost cost the Seahawks a draft pick defending Richard Sherman's injury and why his play has suffered.
Outside a big boy could lose some weight. You know, there have been a couple that maybe are borderline, like, on the fringe.
Yeah.
We've seen guys
do this before, though, Brock. I mean, not necessarily in this. This made me think of another of my experiences, which was covering the Red Sox between 2006, really, and 2008. And during that time, Terry Francona would constantly cover for Manny Ramirez.
Yep.
Constantly.
Yep.
Tito was – nobody has ever treated Manny better than Terry Francona. Every day Manny would just not want to play for whatever odd reason. Manny came in today, his ham is barking, just barking on him a little bit. You can give him a couple days off, and Manny will be just fine. He'll be just fine. Just get ham, he's a little barking. No, it's not. He just came in and said, I don't feel like playing today, Skip. But Tito would cover for him over and over again and take all the bullets.
End?
It ended with Manny Ramirez rumored to have gone to the bathroom on the team plane.
Yeah, how'd that end?
I mean, literally on it.
Yeah.
That's how it ended.
And the players eating food and playing video games and drinking and, yep, right? I mean, how did that end there?
Remarkable to me that a guy in his case who had won two world championships and broken the curse and everything else Tito had done and is still doing in the game,
correct,
that it could end like that for Manny Ramirez, who had always been one of my favorites, and eventually I just couldn't support what he was doing anymore because it's just sickening. And in this case, I guess the same is true for Michael Bennett. Like, you're telling me that's how you – and Richard Sherman, that's how you want to treat the guy who covered for you?
Yes.
That's how you want to treat the guy who had your back and who you won with? It makes me sad. And maybe Pete's got to adapt. And maybe they are adapting by bringing in some new players and doing some different things and moving on from these guys. But I don't think I'm angry. I feel bad for Pete. Mm. I really do. I think it stinks that somebody would do him dirty like that.
And Pete would say, don't worry about me, Mike. I'm just fine.
I think he would. I'm sure he would. If I were to go to Schneider's event tonight and run into Pete there and say, hey, man, I feel really bad for you, I'm sure he wouldn't have any interest in my sympathy.
Pete would say, I'm going to put on my grandpa's sneakers right here, you know, these big clodhoppers. I'm just fine.
That's fine.
And I got a whole bunch of young guys that I'm going to get to continue to mold.
All right. Coach Scott Servais is going to join us in 20 minutes. I'd be kind of curious his thoughts on this and how he sees all this shaking out. Scott's a football guy and obviously has a lot of experience working with some veterans and doing a lot of things to help his team come together as a group. So we'll ask Scott about that coming up in 20 minutes. But the Mariners rather have a guy who has certainly heard it all before right here. And yesterday, I think Jerry DePoto said something about him that may surprise a lot of people who've been around Seattle for some time. We'll play it for you next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Heritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. Award-winning spirits, including BSB and BSB 103. Brown sugar bourbon at 103 proof. Throw your tongue the heater. You can't spell baseball without the BSB Lounge.
Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Getting ready for a little day baseball, huh? Let's go. Hope you're having a good morning. Brock and I are over here at Safeco Field. We're getting ready. 12:40 start today for the M's. And then, Brock, we're going to talk to Scott Service here in about 15 minutes. I do want to just tell people quickly, later tonight, the schedule comes out for the Seahawks. The entire NFL schedule comes out. In light of that, tomorrow we're going to give people a chance to win a pretty cool prize, courtesy of the Seahawks. A chance to win a pair of tickets to any game of your choice during next year's regular season, plus a couple of VIP tickets to the Seahawks exclusive draft day party, which is next week in Bellevue. You and I are going to be there, so people can come hang out.
Yes, we are.
You can get details over at 710sports.com. You got to be 21 or over to win the prize, but we'll be giving that away tomorrow. All right. We spent quite a bit of the day talking about Michael Bennett and the way he just, you know, he handled his business by, according to him, telling Greg Bishop that he was reading during team meetings and just generally not being a good leader and a veteran.
Just tuned out.
A lot of that is similar to things we heard about Ichiro when he was here the last time. Near the end of his tenure, that Brock, he was no longer the type of veteran leader that was helping in the clubhouse, and in fact had turned around and become more of the opposite, more of a selfish player that was hurting what was going on in the clubhouse.
Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, the game of baseball can lead to that a whole lot more than football.
Yeah.
You know, baseball is a team sport, but many times you have your individual accomplishment. It's your individual stats. It's your individual hits. It's your individual games played. It's such a highly individualized sport.
But he was criticized for being extra individual, for being not just individual but selfish. And he comes back here this year, and from everything I have heard behind the scenes, it has been exactly the opposite. Look, I don't know how much longer Ichiro is going to be with the team. Let's be clear. Gamble comes back yesterday, and they make the move with the fifth starter. They're going to make another move on Sunday to bring Erasmo Ramirez up. I don't think they'll get rid of Ichiro at that point. I think they'll probably send down a pitcher in order to give them some flexibility for a few days until eventually Healy comes back. And at that point, I think Ichiro's probably either on the DL or DFA'd. I don't know what else they can do with him. Maybe he retires at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But from everything I've heard, one of the things they've loved, and it's not something that you get to stick around for all year because of it, is that he's been really, really good in the clubhouse. He's been great with the young guys. He's related to everybody. And Jerry DePoto usually does the Jerry DePoto show on Thursdays at 3:30 with Danny Dave and Moore. It was a little early yesterday because of the game today.
Mm.
Yeah, Jerry echoed a lot of those sentiments.
Yeah, he's been terrific. And since the day he got here, it's such a notable presence. And, you know, he has accomplished so much in the game, not just in Major League Baseball, but internationally, what he did in the NPB. More hits than any player that's ever teed it up. You know, it's a phenomenal career. And the way he carries himself, the presence, how giving he is to the players downstairs, whether just watching the interactions with guys like D. Gordon, Mitch Haniger, and Robinson Cano. And, you know, from the most accomplished players in our clubhouse to the youngest, most impressionable, he's touched every one of them in a positive way. And we want to find a way to make that a common event.
And I like all of that, and that is wonderfully endearing. And to be honest with you, Mike, if you're Houston,
it's surprising too.
If you're Houston, you could have that as your 25th guy.
Yeah.
In Seattle, that's not a luxury you're going to afford over the course of the season. It's just not.
Agreed.
In the short term, that is awesome. You know what? Let me just say that. Let's not worry about anything else. Let's just listen and take that at face value for what it is, and it does. And it backs up, I think, Mike, a lot of the comments you've heard behind the scenes as well. That is awesome. That's what you want. That's what you want out of a guy that, I think, frankly, at this stage, he knows. He knows his limitations. He knows he's not 24 anymore, 34, and doesn't have some of the electricity and some of the twitch and some of the things that he needs in his game to both run and play the kind of defense he's capable of. And I think he realizes that. So what do I do? Then I better use the other asset I have, and that's 20-plus years of playing at an unbelievably high level of being a pro and pour into those guys in a way that I haven't had to in the past.
But let's just look, I agree. He can't be here long-term, and I don't think he will be. I think assuming that nobody else gets hurt between now and when Healy comes back, that'll probably spell at least the temporary end for Ichiro on the 25-man roster. The question is, what have you thought about Ichiro version 2018? He's hit, what, 219 or so, and with no power, no extra base hits, and not even a walk. So, I mean, those 219, that's his on-base percentage, that's his slugging percentage, that's it. He's taken away one ball, one home run ball, and then he's also had a couple of miscues in the field as well.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, it hasn't been good enough, But I don't know. I kind of do. I will admit, I do sort of like the reconciliation aspect of it. The fans kind of cheering for him. And you said yesterday he got the biggest ovation of anybody in the ballpark.
He did, and that's good, but that's also bad. Like, that's just not, you know, when you're competing against who you're competing against. And yeah. The Angels are going to come through here, and the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays, and everybody else in the American League, and you just can't afford it. I mean, you can't have it, man. Your margin is zero to none. And as wonderful as that piece is and that component is, Mike, and that, you know, and there is for Jerry DePoto and a Scott Service, and we'll ask him about it. There's immense value from those men's perspective. But from, you know, Robinson Cano's perspective and from Segura's perspective and D. Gordon's perspective, it is, no, man, let's go. Like, we need contributors. We need somebody that can help us ultimately.
And in a couple of days, though, you're going to see that. I mean, once Ryan Healy comes back, and you're probably at this point going to keep Vogel back up because you've got your full complement of four outfielders, and who do you want in a pinch-hitting situation? Vogel back or Ichiro?
Vogel back.
Who do you want in a pinch-running situation? Oh, wait, hold on. Sorry. maybe that's not one we can use. That's why you got Heredia on the roster as well.
I did say to Boy Howdy last night, I said, Boy Howdy, if you're playing out on the field, do you think right now you look very similar? Again, just from a uniform standpoint. Like, if you had to run out, and he said, well, we actually – Howdy thinks he's a little quicker first step.
He's wrong.
Yeah, I think he's
wrong. My first step is much faster.
No, you're not.
His top speed is higher than mine, but my first step is much faster. I'm cat-like
quick. Things
are
wrong. Both of those things are wrong.
Totally, there's no way. But you would look, I think, somewhat similar, right? Mm. I think that's what you said, Howdy. You said you'd think you could fill out the uniform. Mm. What?
I think you would realize
Howdy
that Vogelback's in better
strong and broad.
Yeah, he's
and
not
a
that
powerful
strong.
Man.
Nope. First of all, you know what? Of all of the things on their body, you know where you would see the biggest difference?
Huh.
And it's not close, and it's true for every baseball player.
Legs.
Would be their forearms.
Yes.
His forearms, like every other baseball player, would be at least two of yours.
Oh, yeah. That's
it's crazy. It always boggles my mind. If you ever get a chance to come down early for batting practice or you're around some of the players or whatever, just take a look at their forearms, and every one of them is ginormous. And I guess they work it out. Maybe it's just swinging a bat so many times. But, man, it always stands out to me. All right, let's talk to Scott Service. He's going to come upstairs and join us in just a couple of minutes. They've got a 12:40 start today. Trying to come up with a split here against the Astros. We'll talk to that. We'll talk with Scott about that and a whole lot more. Shut up, Howdy. Next on Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Brock and Salk waiting on Scott Service, who should be with us here in just a couple of minutes. Looking forward to chatting with the skipper for the first time. We try to do these before day matinee games over at Safeco, 12:40 start today for the Mariners, as they're going to send Marco Gonzalez to the hill against Charlie Morton, who's been really, really good, like everybody in that Houston rotation. One other thing I liked yesterday, I just wanted to sneak this in Brock, before Scott sits down. Yeah, I kind of like Mike Leake plunking Springer yesterday. I don't know whether he did it on purpose or not, but I felt like that was a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, hey, just don't, you're a little comfortable out in front of that play. Why don't you just back it off?
Springer's histrionics
bit?
Are very, very exaggerated.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. He standing behind him, you can see him rolling his eyes at
really?
Stuff. Oh, he's just very
Are
dramatic.
You being serious?
Yes.
That's not true.
Yes.
No, he
yes.
does do a little bit of that.
Really?
You know,
I like him, man.
Is Reddick, though. I'd like to plunk that guy, too. He just.
But you want to plunk Reddick just because he's annoying to you. Springer has actually got some baseball reason. Like, hey, get off the plate, man.
Right.
You're way too comfortable against this team.
Yeah.
And even better when you're Mike Leake and you can plunk him and then the next pitch get a quick double play ball and then erase everything you did with one more pitch. That was probably his best inning of the night.
Yeah, and I guess the beauty of this afternoon, and it's going to be an unbelievably glorious
day. Do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, just do it again.
Not with Marco. The margin with Marco, I don't want to see that.
Just do it again.
No, but what I want to see is a win so you get a series split so you can continue your trend of not losing a series this season. And you got the front end of this one. Paxton was really good. And the margin in all of these games has been pretty tight. You know, we were sitting there in the seventh inning like, okay, you know, who's going to find a way to win this thing at the end? You put yourself in position. And ultimately a Houston team that's pretty locked and loaded and has been playing good ball, got it done. But you know, you get a chance today to get that series split, and I think that's what we all asked for coming into this series.
Well, perfect timing then, because Scott Servais, the manager of this bunch, just sitting down here with us for a few minutes.
That's a real bummer how he's not talking baseball right now, talking about his lineup he would want and everything else, and Scott could just slam the door on him.
Howdy in studio?
He's back in the studio. Yeah.
I just want to get the Zunino report from last night.
I'm ready.
What do you got on me, honey?
Yeah, he looks really good. He's chomping at the bit to get back, Skip. He's ready to go.
Chomping? Break down chomping at the bit.
He's been grinding his teeth, literally grinding his teeth at night, thinking about getting in the batter's box.
Again. Now, how do you know what he's doing at night?
Chewing dog bones at night?
When is Zunino coming back? Is this soon?
Yeah, we feel good about where he's at. He'll probably join us over in Texas.
Okay.
That's what we're looking at right now. So reports have been good. Mike caught 9 innings last night, and we're anxious to have him back.
How's the start been?
Pretty good.
Yeah. What's their record, Mike?
They're 9-7. Oh. I did my research before Scott came in today. I'm not going down that road again, so I wanted to make sure I knew exactly what the record was before Scott showed up.
I think our start has been okay. It was nice to start the season at home, first of all. I think it's I know it doesn't happen often with the Mariners. I think it's only our second time in the last 10 years starting at home, and certainly opening up against Cleveland here and the pitching that they have. I thought we played good in that series. You get out on the road. We don't have our full squad yet. I thought we did some good things on the road trip through some tough weather on that trip and coming home here, you know, get off to a good start in the Oakland series and, you know, packs through the ball well. And our pitching has really been fine. It's been better than fine. You know, we've been in these games. You know, it's a hit here or there, or a big play late in the game here the last couple nights that has hurt us a little bit. And you know, we've been shut down. You know, Houston's got outstanding starting pitching. We got to figure out a way today. I thought we did some things last night to create some opportunities. We stole some bases. We're just trying to create as many, you know, getting as many guys in scoring position as we can and hopefully come up with a few more big hits.
When you look around the league and think about your start or the way the whole season's going to go, I mean, I would think it would be hard not to look at the 5 or 6 teams that immediately start to separate themselves from the pack. I mean, Houston and Boston and Anaheim and probably New York and Toronto and whoever's going to end up winning the AL Central. I know things change a lot over the course of 162, but you feel almost some extra urgency because of the way those teams look on paper and have started the year?
I really can't get caught up with what those teams are doing. My focus is on our team, and we talked about it in spring training. We wanted to get off to a better start. You know, last year we struggled out of the gate. We didn't hit at all early on last year. So the focus was, you know, I've heard you say it before, you can't win the division in April, but you can dig yourself a little bit of a hole. And I think that, like I said, coming out of the gate, we've played with good energy. Our clubhouse is in a good spot. Our guys believe, understand where we're at. And, you know, we're a little bit of the underdog, which is not such a bad thing.
I got quite a few questions for you.
No way.
No,
they're all written down. Yeah,
Brock was here last night in the Diamond Club. He had good seats. He's been preparing for this.
No, I heard
Brock slept in my office last night. I saw that picture he took at about 5 a.m. this morning. He slept in my office. There's no question.
Shh, don't tell everybody. Okay. I heard you say yesterday postgame, and you just referenced it as well, as just kind of your plan of attack. You know, we hear about a game plan an awful lot in other sports. We hear about matchups in the NBA playoffs. How much does a game plan change game to game or series to series? Do you have do you go in there and say, you know, this is going to be our plan today and we're going to make sure we get the extra base. We're going to make sure we're going to steal. We're going to make sure we get something early to get home. So those guys have some of that mindset game to game. How much variance is there?
Oh, quite a bit. You know, we'll have our hitters meeting every day, which Edgar's a part of putting our game plan together there for that particular night, how we're going to try to attack the pitcher. You know, these teams within the division, a lot of times you have a lot of history with these guys. Our players have personal history, matchup history. They'll throw their 2 cents in. This is what this guy likes to do early in the count, behind in the count, late in the count, early in the game, late in the game. You know, those type of things get brought up. If we have a particular plan, we maybe want to attack some things. He's not great at holding runners. You know, we might want to take advantage of that. Their catchers have been struggling. That's what advanced scouts are for. We spend a lot of time with that. As far as, you know, game planning, our pitching staff, I meet with our pitching coaches every day. kind of get the update where our bullpen's at, who's live tonight, who might be down tonight, what are the particular matchups, where you want to go in certain parts of their lineup. So there's a lot of game planning going in every day.
I think one of the only stories Salk's listened to that he really likes from my playing days back in the day is the Colts versus Jacksonville Jaguars. And the Jacksonville Jaguars in that day had two D tackles, Marcus Stroud and John Henderson, two enormous mammoth men. And I remember so vividly, Scott, Tom Moore, our longtime coordinator, saying to us, I'm not going to be a hero up here. We're not running these 10-run plays. We're just not doing it. These guys are Pro Bowlers. We know what they got. When it comes to a pitching staff like Houston's, when it comes to that rotation, and you face guys with the kind of stuff that their pitchers can have, and you get a feel for that and you see that, how do you try to attack them? Is it a mentality of, oh, it doesn't really matter what they do, or is it, hey, man, we have got to make sure when they make this mistake or have this pitch, how specific is it to a staff as loaded as that one?
Well, you do want to have a game plan, and guys may have some tendencies. There's certain counts. They will throw certain pitches in, or they'll pitch differently with nobody on base versus when there's guys in scoring position. So I want our players to be aware of that. I think it's really important to watch the game. You know, as the game unfolds, you know, our guys are locked in, and they're talking amongst themselves, you know, how much the cutter's moving or how much the sinker's moving, or is he pitching inside or not pitching inside. So, but you – when you walk in the box, you kind of take all the information, but you got to just go compete.
And react.
Yes, you really do. It's hard to hit.
Yeah, when I sit in those seats down close, I don't know how they do it.
Sometimes, you know, you get locked in, you start watching the games on TV. It looks so easy. How does he miss that pitch? How does he swing at that pitch? You know, the games, it looks really easy from the stands or sometimes on TV. But, you know, our guys, I love the depth of our lineup. We can do some different things. We've been shut down here the last couple nights, but you know it takes somebody to get a big hit to get the ball rolling on this thing. And last night, you know, guy goes over the wall and catches a ball from Segura, which is a huge play in the ball game last night. Allows us to take the lead and gain a little bit momentum on them. We know we get a guy thrown out the plate. They made an excellent play. I have no issues with us pushing the envelope and trying to score that run, but they made plays last night. You've got to give them credit.
Some of the things that have gone right in the early part of this year, and that list may start with Edwin Diaz, who has dominated each one of his appearances so far. What is it that's different, better? Is it a maturity? Is it mental? Is it physical? What's different?
The maturity thing is the biggest thing for me, and you'll see Eddie once in a while, and they'll just step off the mound. He might lose a couple fastballs up arm side, and in the past, he'd try to get the ball back as quick as he could, get back on the mound, and let's just go get the next one. He's starting to slow it down a little bit. Some nights, better fastball. Some nights, better slider. When they're both on, it's pretty much lights out. I've had a lot of fun with Eddie and seeing him mature and grow from a young kid just coming to the big leagues to now kind of working his way into being an established, you know, closer in this league. I joked to him the other day. I said, "Do you think you can get 50? Can you get 50 saves?" "I got it, Poppy. I got it." I said, "Okay, you know, Eddie, these guys, they got the hair, you know, the haircuts, the little waves." I said, "You get 50, I'll cut my hair just like you." So he's got a little thing with me going. He says, "You better get ready, get the clippers out." But, you know, Eddie's a big part of that bullpen. It's nice to have, you got to have the anchor down there, and he's done a great job for us.
Did he go a uniform smaller, or is he filling it out a little better?
He's filling it out, yeah. He's you know, talked about it in spring training. I thought he had a little more mature, kind of grown into his man muscles, I call it, a little bit in spring training. And, you know, he's in a really good spot. Juan Nicasio's helped him a lot, too. Juan has been through the league. He's been on a couple different clubs. He's matured into kind of an established guy that has a very good routine, and Eddie's kind of hung around with him. It's helped Eddie.
Permission to speak freely and ask maybe a dumb question? Permission to speak freely?
Never. Okay. Never you asking a dumb question.
Baseball guys, through the years of doing this, I've learned, and it's because it's such a hard game, have a lot of pride in what they do. You know, I think I get that sense from baseball, pro baseball players more than even the other guys. It's the athleticism in the NBA separates, right? Football, there's a physical touch, but such a team mentality. Baseball players, as I've experienced them for a decade, the guys that have done it, have a sense of pride because they know how hard it is. D. Gordon, I watched him last night, and I watched him in the spring, has to have immense pride as a gold glove second baseman. He was the best. He's a gold glove. Unbelievable. And now, Scott, he's transitioning to something he's never done at this level. To do it at this level, not at AAA or AA. How is he just mentally and just the mindset in that transition?
Well, from day one, he's embraced the change. Once we acquired him, he's got right after it. From the first day he was headed into spring training, he wanted to look like an outfielder. He did. I thought the transition was about as smooth as we could have asked for. I've said all along there will be some bumps in the road. There'll be some plays. Maybe he doesn't get the right read on it or not quite take the right route. He's so fast, sometimes he overruns balls.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that a little bit. So there is a transition. There's things happening. I love D. Gordon. I love having him out there. I do think he's got an opportunity to win a Gold Glove in center field. I really do. With the speed, he can throw. His baseball IQ, his instincts, it's all leads in that direction. And he's meant a ton for us in our clubhouse as well. But, you know, the transition, there are going to be some bumps in the road once in a while. It's just the way it is, moving from the infield to the outfield and doing what he's doing. And not just that, he's hitting at the top of our lineup. He's kind of our energy guy. He knows it. Yeah. He knows what he is on our ball club. And I think he's off to a really good start. Really happy where he's at.
How's his ankle?
He's fine. Yeah. D has got plenty of toughness, even though he weighs about 165 pounds. He's wired the right way. He wants to win. He wants to be a part of what we're doing down there every day.
So that play last night, right? That's a play he's going to make. I think game, I don't know when it's going to be, but that's a play, at least to my eye where I'm sitting, that's a play I think he is going to make. Play like that last night, does he say anything to you afterwards? Is there any...
No, it's conversation with him and Chris Prieto, our outfield guy, and you know, all of our coaches, you know, giving them the autonomy and the ability to go out and have that relationship with our players. And you know, where I was sitting, as soon as the ball left the bat, I didn't think he was going to have a chance to get there, but the speed is unbelievable. He got there, he closed on it. You know, it's a play that if it happens 10 times, he probably catches 9 out of 10 of them. Last night was one he didn't pull in.
There have been some moments that stand out with him where you just can really see his energy. I mean, it's not being next to him. It's not being down in the dugout. But even on TV, you can really see his energy when he literally just 2 foot jumps over the little fence that's in front of the dugout. When you see the giant fist, high five that he did after hitting that home run. How do you guys feel his energy down there?
Well, I think everybody feeds off it. That's the biggest thing. And it's genuine. It's not fake. It's not just when the camera's on. It's that way all the time. And it's why, you know, he's really driving the train here in that leadoff spot. Everybody looks to him. His ability to deaden the ball on a bunt is outstanding. The play that Matt Chapman made on him the other day in the Oakland game, which was a huge play in that game, I was amazed. And Chapman, unbelievable arm, really good young defender that Oakland has there. But how he can deaden the ball off the bat. And the pressure you saw last night when Cole had to try to make the play, everybody knows how fast he is. And it just hurries the throws. Everything goes awry. He can really create havoc on the baseball field.
Speaking of speed, I think we've seen Nelson Cruz really display it here over the last couple of days getting down the line. How much is he dealing with injury-wise?
He's dealing with quite a bit. Trying to rush back, you know, after the ankle. And certainly we know what he means to the middle of our lineup. Don't think he's 100%. He'll say he is, but we've watched it. And I think, you know, he's a presence in our lineup. We want him in there as much as we can, and he's going to be in there. I trust Nelson Cruz. I really do, and he's earned that. You know, he's a veteran in this league. He's produced. He's a leader on our ball club. You know, some days it's still bothering him. Some days it feels better than others. He'll be in there today. I certainly respect him. I trust him. But, you know, when he does hit a ground ball at a shortstop, it is not going to bust down the line right now. He's just not there physically right now.
Does he have a special ramp now in the dugout or anything with the stairs or issues?
We fixed the stairs a little bit.
One of those rascal scooters or
something? They actually have a tacky little substance. You can see in our dugout from where we're sitting right now. They did change some things down there, so hopefully you won't see that happen again.
I feel bad for whoever it is you teed off on afterwards. Were you yelling at people back there after he got hurt?
I wouldn't do that.
No, never.
You just sort of grit your teeth?
My buddy was yelling next to me. He played at Washington State collegiately. He was a good player. He yelled at me yesterday after Vogelbach's shot there late in the game. He's like, that's a hit. It was a hit 10 years ago. It's a hit 50 years ago. It's a hit 100 years ago. It's a hit 150 years ago. These shifting, you know, and it started to just kind of like get in my, like, that's a hit. These are hits. And the shifting today, how do you counteract it?
Don't hit them where they're at. The game is changed. It really has. There's so many balls that are hit. Like you said, it was a hit for I don't know how many years. It no longer is a hit. But you gotta credit other teams. We are very aggressive shifting as well. Why wouldn't you when they have the numbers and it speaks so clearly that this is where the guy's going to hit the ball 75-85% of the time? Get your guys in those spots. We always remember the ones that don't work our way.
Yeah.
Whether they beat us. against the shift, we're out there on defense, or the other way around, like last night. It's, we kind of forget all the ones that, oh my gosh, we saved a run there. You know, it really does make a difference.
And is it is that hard and that challenging to just hit it the other way? I mean, and I know it's a stupid question, but as I just sit there and you see even Robbie Cano, whose hands are some of the best in baseball, whose back control is as good as it is, and they're shifting against a Robbie Cano.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, and teams, they're going to pitch to it as well.
Yep.
You know, so when they're playing three infielders on one side of the field, they're also throwing the ball in there, you know, and trying to get you to pull the ball on the ground. So there's a lot that plays into it. Funny story, you guys appreciate Taylor Motter, so I'll share one for you here. So, you know, they do shift against Taylor, obviously. You know, his power is to the pull side and doesn't hit many ground balls to the right side, and we're playing over in Kansas City last week on the road trip, and situation came up, and Manny Acta and Taylor are always kind of going back and forth, and Manny just said, Taylor, I'll give you $100 if you hit a ground ball to the second baseman. And I heard it, and I said, I will too. And Edgar said, I will too. And Robbie said, I will too.
Oh.
Okay, so it's like
$400.
You know, it's going up, and it's crazy, and Taylor's now. So Taylor's hitting second in the inning, and the leadoff hitter hits a double. Now we got to hit the other way, right? We got to move him over and do the other stuff. So it's a left-handed pitcher out there, and Taylor gets in the box. And you know what he's trying to do. He's focused. He's trying to do the right thing for the team, and don't be the right thing for himself.
$400. He's incentivized. So,
first pitch is a changeup, and he rolled it over to the shortstop. And we all looked at each other. And to answer your question, Rock, he's trying to do it, you know, yeah. And, you know, he didn't execute, got to be able to slow the game down and be able to do those things. It's something our guys talk about a lot,
yep.
But, you know, things happen.
That's why broadcasters are contractually mandated to say that's a good piece of hitting after somebody goes the other way.
True.
It's written into everyone's contract. Oh, that's a good piece of hitting right there. Look at him go the other way. It's so hard to do.
Hey, you know, one of the big national stories, I do want to get to this. One of the big national stories yesterday was actually some sound from a Sports Illustrated writer who jumped on with us, and he was documenting Michael Bennett. He was embedded with Michael Bennett for about six different occasions last year, and Michael Bennett told him how, you know what, during Pete Carroll's team meetings, he was reading books. I would just read.
He tuned Pete out. He was done.
I just tuned him out. When it comes to just you messaging with a team, how much do you ever focus on the eye contact or, you know, in just that relationship you have in that environment to reach these other pros?
I'm shocked you brought this up.
Are you?
As I saw this come out yesterday, and I thought to myself, I'm going on with Brock and Salk. What are the chances that Brock doesn't bring this up? Okay.
No, he's going to roll over and he's going to be
the only chance of Brock not bringing it up would be if I had brought it up before him.
True. You know, players and teams all wired different. I have utmost respect for the Seahawks and what Pete Carroll has done in creating a culture over there. You know, anytime you're addressing your team and you're trying to get points across and, you know, you're trying to connect with them. That's the word I often use, is connecting with them. And, you know, we have guys, I'll have a team meeting and their head is down, and sometimes you just have to call the guy out, you know.
Yep.
And it may be whoever. Hey, Jimmy, you with me? And you make him, yeah, exactly. You know, you wake up, you know, you hear what I'm saying and things like that. Now, you typically do that to a younger player. You don't oftentimes do that to an established guy. But, you know, in knowing your team and knowing the climate of your team and having your finger on the pulse of your club, you know, understanding your message and how important it is. We play so many games.
Yep.
You know, I cannot have a team meeting every day. I don't. I have a lot of meetings in spring training. It's looser. We're getting to know each other. We're starting to establish some things in our clubhouse. But, you know, once the season starts, it's not rally the troops. You know, every time you lose two or three in a row. These guys are pros. They know how to prepare. You've got to trust your guys that they'll be ready to go. There's four or five times during the year you do have to raise your voice and get their attention and grab it. And when you go there, it's really important that, you know, those guys are connected. And oftentimes when you have that meeting, there's a follow-up meeting after it, mm-hmm. you know, which is might be a little sidebar with just one or two of the guys and get their thoughts on things and make sure they really understood what you were trying to get across. So every team's different, you know, but I got the utmost respect for what Pete has done here in town and really, you know, kind of, you know, changed the way coaches in all sports went about their business. When Pete came in, and I follow football very closely, you know, and I watch how different guys interact with their teams and how they try to set their environment up. And, you know, I thought Pete had done a fantastic job here, not just with the Seahawks, but the whole city, yeah. You know, and it certainly helps to win. And that's what we're trying to get done here at Safeco Field.
I wonder if some of the baseball equivalent would be, maybe not the team meetings, but how you interact in the dugout, how much attention you're paying to the game, how much the guys are spending time looking through the scouting reports beforehand to familiarize themselves with it all. How many conversations do you find yourself having along those lines?
A lot. Yeah, I really do. Probably a little less this year than when I did in my first couple of years. That's one of the things that I've tried to change a little bit, and putting more of it on my coaching staff and asking them to deliver the message and giving them every opportunity to deliver the message. So it might be more, you know, Edgar and myself talking about one or two of our particular hitters, letting Edgar run with it. But if it does come to a point where maybe I need to help stress the point a little bit, then you hear get it from a different voice, you know, you go ahead and do that. And the same thing on the pitching side.
What's it been like having Ichiro here?
It's been a lot of fun.
Well, we heard Jerry say yesterday that he's really been great in the clubhouse.
He really has.
You ever dress like him?
No.
Not yet.
No. The thing that Ichiro does every day. Not yet? Did you just drop it?
Yeah, not yet. Well, I was realizing that's the difference between spring training manager and regular season manager. Spring training manager can joke about that kind of stuff. Yep. Regular season manager is like, what, are you crazy? I don't have time for that. I'm in the middle of an 162-game sprint. Leave me alone.
Ichi has he's brought a lot of life to our team, and probably the highlight for me every day. You know, everybody's got their handshake, their little thing before the game, their fist. You know, everybody's got their own thing with everybody. Ichi will go up and down the line. He's got the loudest, and he'll start imitating everybody. You know, he's got the Robbie Cano. He didn't even do it the young guys. He does a thing with Marjima. He does a thing. So, Ichi, what do you got on me? So he started imitating my batting practice, like, motion when I throw BP once in a while. And I think I've only thrown to Ichi one time in spring training. And he had me down. And, 10 or 11 guys see it, and they're laughing and, you know, killing themselves over it. But, you know, Ichi, he's had a great attitude since we brought him in. You know, the playing time and where he's at, you know, going forward. We'll see how it works out. You know, we got Ben Gamble in the mix now. You know, our original club coming into spring training, you know, did not have Ichiro on it. Ben Gamble was in to be our pretty much our everyday left fielder along with Heredia. But, you know, we'll see where we're at. Love having Ichi on the club. You know, ultimately, though, it's about what's best for the ball club and what's going to help us win.
Most important for Marco today to get this series split.
You know, I think get off to a good start. You know, getting through their lineup the first time. I don't think he needs to hold anything back in his bag of tricks, so to speak. You know, fire it all out there. I think we're realistic on what we're looking for today.
A similar message with Felix, did I hear you say, kind of a week ago as well? Or you know, at least some parallel there of, hey, we're not waiting until the third time through a rotation. Let's, you know, with our bullpen and what you got on the back end of it, let's get after guys.
Yeah, and with our offense, too. You play a little bit different offense when you're up by a run or two than you do when you're down by three or four. So, and it, certainly their pitcher attacks you differently. So, I think with all of our starters, you know, Paxton might be the one guy that can go out and stuff you early in the game. Just, you know, the other night he had great stuff in the first inning and went right after him. But, you know, the other guys get you all your pitches working. And if you've got to break them all out there in the first or second inning, go ahead. Do it. Just put some zeros up there.
What are the Packers going to do a week from today?
Oh, wow.
We got to run.
No, I don't focus.
Oh, we won't even take that. This is a regular season manager.
That's right.
Come on. Why don't we ask that stuff in spring training?
Sneak that in.
Scott, it's been a lot of fun watching this day. It's one of the most common things I think we've read on the text line or on Twitter world, et cetera, is, hey, this team's been really fun to watch, and they don't give up. And 9-5 a couple days ago, 9-7 today. Good chance to get back to 10-7 with a win today and head out on the road. So thank you for coming and sitting down with us again. We enjoy it.
No problem, guys. Take care, and howdy. Keep an eye on Zunino for me, okay?
You got it, Skip.
Okay. Thanks, buddy. I'm glad you weren't asleep.
There it is. Thanks for waking up for that.
Yeah. Wake up, howdy.
Wake up. Hold on. All right, we got to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow morning, of course. Enjoy Mariner baseball. This morning, 11:30 pregame, 12:40 first pitch, and then Todd Lywicki. Going to talk some hockey with him tomorrow morning in studio at 8 o'clock. Until then, the hey.
Barn.